You're listening to Music Tectonics.
Welcome back to Music Tectonics, where we go beneath the surface of music and tech. I'm your host, Dimitri Vitsa. I'm also the founder and CEO of Rock Paper Scissors, the PR firm that specializes in music innovation and music tech. And I have an old friend that I'm bringing on to talk about big ideas and to get into what she's up to. Let me tell you about her. Dr. Portia Sabin is president of the Music Business Association, which exists to connect, educate, and empower the global music business community. While working on her PhD at Columbia University, Portia played drums, recorded, and toured with the New York City band, the Hissy Fits. She founded Shot Clock Management in 2004 and ran the legendary independent label Kill Rock Stars for 13 years. She's the host of a podcast about the music business called The Future of What, which has been going on longer than Tectonics and has been an inspiration for me to get into this as well. Portia is a former board member of the Pacific Northwest chapter of the Recording Academy, the RIAA, and the American Association of Independent Music, A2IM, and is currently on the advisory boards of Neva and Viva Collect. And of course, the Music Business Conference is coming up May 13th to 16th in Nashville, so I wanted to have Portia on. Hey, Portia, how you doing?
Hey, Dimitri, how are ya?
I'm doing great.
Yay.
It's good to have you here on the podcast.
I know. I love it. It's fun.
So I'm going to jump right in. You've got a bird's eye view into this entire field, the types of stuff that we talk about on Music Tectonics. How would you describe the current era of the music industry compared to past moments?
Well, that's always a good question. I think the music industry is tough to pin down a little bit. It's always changing. And, you know, you guys at Music Tectonics, you know, you get the whole picture, which is, you know, we are like an industry that plays constant catch up. You know, technology changes and then everybody's like, oh, my God, and has to rush and try to figure out like what to do. And so, you know, one of the things that I've really liked about this moment, this current era in the music industry, is that so many more people kind of like, I don't know, within the last 5 to 10 years, started to take the music business a little bit more seriously and started coming to us with real solutions to problems, you know, technological solutions to problems rather than, I mean, I don't know if you remember this, but like, I remember when I was running Kill Rock Stars in the early days of the internet, there were like, you know, all these people or like, you know, real internet, you know, who wrote me emails that were like, if you text this number during a show, then you get a hat. And it's like, what? Like, why? Nobody wants that. It was like so useless. Like I was always just like, what? And then there was that moment where like blockchain was going to happen and completely transform the whole industry. That went away. You know, it's like, I feel like people like see what they want to see in the music industry. And the people who last are the ones who take it seriously and understand it. And so what I love about the current era is there's so much great new tech that people are coming up with to solve genuine problems that we have in the industry. So I really love that about the current era. I also see from my position, there's been like a little bit more togetherness. Like, you know, when I started in the music business like 25 years ago, I felt like everything was really siloed, right? Like these people were over here and these people were over here and nobody wanted to play nice and everybody was like trying to hang on to their little piece of the pie. And I almost think it's the pandemic that upended that because, you know, the most obvious example of that is the live industry. You know, it's like the live industry has always, for whatever reason, sort of kept themselves off to one side. You know, they're like, we're the live industry. We are, you know, booking and all this stuff, but we're over here. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, my God, now nobody can tour. And guess what? Everybody's losing, you know, when that happened. Yeah. So. Yeah. I think that brought everybody together a little bit more and just started making everyone realize like, hey, the money that is out there, you know, rising tide lifts all boats. Like everybody's got to kind of play a little bit more nicely to capture what's out there. And so I definitely see, you know, the industry coming together in certain ways around like, for example, fraud. That's been a thing I've been working on for the past year and a half a lot. With a whole bunch of folks who've come together, Music Fights Fraud Alliance is something that we've worked on. We had a Spin Fraud Task Force. We started that last year. Just like people are more willing to talk about problems and more willing to work together, I think. So, I mean, I could go on and on, but you have more than one question. So,
well, no, this is great. No, to hear, to kind of get a pulse check from your perspective, your vantage point is actually super helpful. And I appreciate you sort of thinking through the lens of a music tectonics listener as well on the technology side. It does feel like more and more of the music industry is, I mean, I say it a little bit on a hypey scale of like, it's all tech now. It's not all tech now. You know, there's still other things that are happening, but it sure feels like there's a lot of considerations around what technology is being used for not just, you know, distribution and streaming, but for marketing and promotion and for collaboration and a lot of, you know, an artist or a record label's day-to-day life is very tech-centric, like a lot of us in society today. So
yeah.
Anyway, I appreciate you kind of looking through it with that lens as well. I mean, you know, another piece of that, I guess, is, you know, what happens between the quote traditional music industry and other technology platforms that emerge, social media. And I'd love to get your perspective on the Universal Music TikTok standoff, I guess we could call it. Why is this happening? And what do you see as the path forward for music licensing in what I might call the great exposure versus monetization debate?
Well, that is as old as the music industry, the exposure versus monetization debate, for sure.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, this moment is a lot like other moments. And I think one of the ways that we can think about it is it's kind of back to like the quantity over quality argument, mm-hmm. in that, you know, one viral video does not a career make, right? So it's like when you're talking to artists, when you're thinking about, you know, educating artists about what they need to understand about the music industry, you know, TikTok is a lot of fun. A lot of the new social media stuff platforms are cool and exciting. But at the end of the day, the people who are able to monetize them do really hard work. Like they work really hard. And I think, you know, Universal being the largest of the three majors, you know, they are in a unique position, and people can have their problems with, you know, a company that's in a unique position like that. But at the end of the day, what labels seek to do is help their artists have careers over time. And if you're an artist and you're not, you don't have the body of work, then it doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean? It's like any kind of, you know, I think what this moment has highlighted is that you can have a great viral moment, but every single person who loves that video or whatever is going to say, what next? And if you don't have anything next, then you're gone, right? It's the next cool cat video, you know, that just takes people's eyeballs. So, you know, there's a fickleness to popularity, right? That has always been true. That's just always been true in the music industry. You have to have something else to back it up. You have to have a place to go. You have to be an artist. And being an artist means having a body of work, having, you know, shows, having, you know, plans, like just it's a whole nine yards. And so, you know, I think when we think about Universal and TikTok, it's like they're doing what makes perfect sense from a label perspective, which is they're just trying to protect their artist income streams. They're trying to make sure that they get paid for what they actually are, you know, should get paid. And you know, it's just the latest in a long line of those types of deals that people make. But I think, you know, the bigger picture is what I've been saying. It's like, you have to be, as an artist, cognizant of, you know, what the work is that goes into being an artist, and how, you know, TikTok is not, you know, somebody said to me, playlisting is not a like career plan. You know, it's like, and there, because that was like before TikTok, right? It's like, oh, if we just get on this one cool playlist on Spotify, then we're going to be huge. And it's like, no, that's not how that works.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is a dynamic that's ongoing between these social and tech platforms and the music industry, but also other industries that have copyright or intellectual property or creative works. I guess one way to look at it is if you are a pure capitalist, it is a free market negotiation that's happening, right?
It's absolutely.
It's like within UMG's and and their publisher's right to say, hey, no, you know, if you're not willing to negotiate on this licensing, then we have to pull our stuff. But it's interesting because, you know, running a music tech podcast myself in a conference and PR firm, people think that I might side on the side of the tech platforms, but I really want to walk right on the middle, right on that line of sort of like, no, this makes sense. What Portia's saying makes sense. Like, there's a whole team of people behind this, and you know, the artists themselves, they've created this legally. This work is protected, and you got to pay to use it, especially right. If you're growing profit off of it. You know, like, TikTok's not some fly by night operation at this point. It's a significant media enterprise.
Exactly.
And building something like that. You know, we talk about it in our How to Startup series that we're doing on the podcast as well, about, you know, licensing is a significant challenge for a lot of smaller music tech startups, but you got to do it. It's mm-hmm. part of, you know, like, if you're building something off of music, that's part of the deal there. So,
right. And if you don't want to do it, then just look at the MLC, because that is the result. Congress will step in, and then not only are you paying artists, but you're also funding an entire organization to collect the royalties that you didn't want to pay. So think about it.
And there's other ways to do things with music without having to use people's music without licensing it. You know, like, you know, there's a lot of, if you're interested in music and you want to do innovation, you don't have to be a social media or social video or streaming platform. There's other things you can do that are super cool. Portia, 2020 was the year of live streaming. You talked a little bit about the pandemic, and I think that emerged there. 2021 was the year of the metaverse. 2022 was the year of NFTs.
Uh-huh.
And 2023 and 2024 seem to be the years of AI, artificial intelligence. And the initial industry response seemed to be, oh shit, here come the deep fakes. Oh no, not another tool to flood the DSPs with music. But one person said to me that AI is a dream scenario for record labels. And with the ability to extend IP to new formats, more music, and new forms of fan engagement, how do you think record labels should be thinking about AI?
The funny thing about AI is, of course, it is the year of AI. And Music Biz, the conference that we put on every year, is kind of a great barometer of what the industry is concerned with. Because 2022, we got something like 30 proposals that were all about NFTs. Yeah. And then last year we got one, and this year we got zero on NFTs, yeah. But we got like 38 proposals about AI. So, you know, you can really tell what the industry wants to talk about. So for sure, AI is a big deal right now. The funny part about it is that I find the conversation about AI very, it's almost like it's so in the nitty gritty that it's a little bit uninteresting, because really there's two ways to look at AI. There's the tech side and the legal side, right? Those are mm-hmm. the two conversations that are currently going on. And the legal side is just really basic. It's like, what's Congress going to do? You know, what laws are going to be enacted to make sure that certain people are protected? You know, the Elvis Act was just enacted here in Tennessee, which was the first major piece of copyright legislation in the state of Tennessee for a very long time concerning the music industry, to protect name, image, likeness. I can't remember what all the letters stand for.
Yeah, but you got it.
Yeah, something like that. And you know, that's really important. But that is, you know, if you're a lawyer, you can go crazy on that. But that's not really my wheelhouse.
Right.
I'm not like, woo, let's go talk about that for 6 hours. And then the other side is the tech side, is like, how can AI be used? I think it's also bringing out the conversation of like, how is AI already being used, right? Mm-hmm. Which a lot of artists are already using it in a lot of different types of programs. I have a friend who makes the bulk of her living doing songs on Songfinch, which is mm-hmm. the, you know, order your own song, personalized, I love you,
custom
baby,
song,
because
yeah.
you wore that white dress on Thursday and got the Piggly Wiggly or whatever. You know, and you can get your own song. And she uses a lot of AI in that. And that's great. You know, that's working for her. It's helping her have an income and a career. I think the whole thing with AI is it's just a little bit less exciting than people are thinking it is, you know, because it is just mm-hmm. same stuff different day, right? Like it's, oh yeah, it's a new, another piece of technology that's come along that can challenge copyright, right? And challenge artists' ability to control copyright. And that is something that we've been dealing with as long as there have been artists, as long as there have been labels, and as long as there's been technology. You know, it's like that challenging copyright is sort of a tough part of the music industry. What you said about how labels should be thinking about AI, I do think that's totally true. You know, if you have AI and you have an artist who is deceased, for example, you know, maybe how can AI help with that? How can you create new pieces of music or use old pieces of music in new ways? You know, it's definitely, I think, something that labels are going to be interested in.
Right. Yeah. I guess I bring it up because I think on the one hand, you've got this, you know, this challenge to copyright. If AI companies are training on data that is somebody else's music, intellectual property, and not attributing it, not monetizing it, not licensing it, that's one aspect. But the other aspect is, you know, can AI help record labels, not only with deceased artists to extend IP into a modern era and with relevant recording, but also there may be other extensions, you know, for record labels to, you know, work with an artist that they already have to allow fans to create content that the label and the artist still own or partially own or something, but create like another level of interactivity and engagement with fans in a way that doesn't make sense in the old music industry, but could still be within the, you know, provide incentives to record labels and artists to do as well. So I don't know. I just put it out there because it could be interesting to see where it goes.
Yeah. No, I definitely think it'll be interesting to see where it goes. I think it's really hard to tell right now what direction that's going to go in, but it definitely, there's a lot of potential.
Awesome. All right. We need to take a quick break for a message. But when we come back, I'm really curious to talk to you about the explosion of creator tools. We'll be right back.
Did you know that this podcast is just one way Music Tectonics goes beneath the surface of music and tech? We know that innovation thrives on community and connections. So we bring innovators together with a free online event series we call Seismic Activity. And of course, the Music Tectonics Conference every October in Los Angeles. And of course, last but not least, meetups at major music industry events like the NAMM Show, South by Southwest, and Music Biz in Nashville. Stay on top of our schedule by getting the Music Tectonics newsletter right in your inbox. Sign up right now at musictectonics.com.
Okay, we're back. And Portia, this has been super awesome to get your kind of bird's eye view here. There's an explosion of tools for new types of musical creators. Social music creation app BandLab recently announced 100 million users. I'm curious, what do you think will be the lasting impact of this creator explosion on the record industry?
Well, unfortunately, I have the depressing answer, Dimitri, that regulation will be the result of the creator explosion on the record industry. That's what I actually think is true.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, you're seeing it with Spotify already, right? You're seeing that now you have to have 1,000 plays a week or whatever to get paid, or I can't remember what the time period is. Do you remember?
Maybe a year. I'm not sure.
1,000 plays a year. I don't remember. Whatever. But, you know, it's like now there's a floor for getting paid because the explosion of creators has created this problem where there's so much content that it can't properly all be handled. And a lot of it is, you know, there's, I mean, I don't remember what the statistic is. It's like 90% of the stuff that's on Spotify is actually listened to once or zero times. Like,
yeah.
So, you know, at some point, that is going to have to start getting, you know, that's going to create some changes. And I think we're going to get regulation. Yeah. I think we're going to get gatekeeping, which I think is hilarious and ironic. It makes me want to like roll on the floor laughing because the whole promise of the internet was to get rid of gatekeepers. And it just makes me die laughing. I think it's so funny. It's like, oh, the internet couldn't handle itself. Now we have to have gatekeepers back. Because it's like, that's what record labels were, you know, it's like record labels were gatekeepers. They were the people who, you know, somebody at a record label had the ability to say, I like this band and not this band. I'm going to put my money and time and energy into this band, you know, supporting them and promoting them. And if you didn't have that, you didn't have access to the marketplace. If you didn't have a label, you know? So this new, you know, it was a big, exciting revolution. And listen, my band was one of the first bands on the Orchard, literally. Mm-hmm. Like, if you go back, our little CD was like one of the very first CDs that was distributed via the internet, via the Orchard. And that was just because my bass player was dating the office manager of the Orchard when it was on Orchard Street in 1999 or whatever that was. Yeah. And now I'm 105.
I remember that. I've been in that office. I was in that office. I remember that.
Isn't that funny?
I think I saw your CD there on the shelf.
Probably. Exactly. A million copies that nobody ever bought, which is fine. But, you know, it's like that's what I think is going to happen. I think we're going to get regulation. We're going to get gatekeeping. And then, you know, something new will happen. I mean, the thrill of the music industry is that it all changes all the time, you know, and that's what happens.
Yeah. The Media Association put out an article late last year about the bifurcation of the music industry and that the streaming services might be one type of music, the more commercially viable music, and then there'll be other places, kind of like the way SoundCloud was in its early days or the way YouTube can still be, but also these BandLab and these other platforms where there's these emerging, these experiments, there's these draft songs, and there's this... What used to be called fan created music or something, you know, something like that. It's like, who's the artist, who's the audience? That stuff's starting to get blurred. So that might be another thing I could see happening too, where there's like two different channels. And then on the gatekeeping front, I'm curious to see if, you know, there's sort of scalable automated A&R tools that where this, you know, top of funnel of all these music creators are starting to get surfaced by record labels and distributors and professionals that start to take something from that sort of like amateur start into a kind of professionalized and commercialized way as well. But it will be interesting to see. I think, I mean, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I don't know what's going to happen.
No, I know. Me neither.
You know, on the other side, that's the creation side. On the other side is the fan side. There seems to be this continued enthusiasm in the traditional industry or the whatever, the formal industry, the record industry for thinking about fandom as a new business line. Why do you think it's becoming so important and where do you think that that aspect will go?
I don't know. That question really makes me like go back to my Columbia University days when I was getting my PhD in anthropology. Because honestly, the behavior of fans is fascinating. And there's like a whole line of, you know, social science research on fandom and like what it is that people get out of being a fan, you know, fan behavior or stuff like that. So, I mean, I think it's really, really interesting, but I don't think it is fully fleshed out yet. I don't think people have a really good take on it because... You know, the music industry hasn't been the best necessarily at capitalizing. I mean, you know, certain companies are great at capitalizing on fandom, but some companies are not as great at it. And a lot of times artists left on to their own devices are not great at capitalizing on it. Because if you think about it, you know, the one of the big innovations of the internet that I think is really true is, you know, what people say now about, you know, if you have 10,000 fans, you don't need anything else. They'll, you know, if you have 10,000 diehard fans, they'll buy everything that you put out and you can make a living by just super serving those super fans. Right. And I think that's absolutely true. And I don't even know if the number is as high as 10,000. You might be able to do it with less. And that is something that the internet has changed, that the technology has created that's new from 25 years ago when I started, because, you know, once upon a time, that was not possible. You had to have a very different superstructure in order to have a career, even as like a middle income sort of journeyman artist. But you know, I don't know if people are going to be good at capitalizing on fans. I think there's a lot of technology coming into the industry that is thinking about that question and trying to connect artists and fans in new ways. And I love that. I think that would be, you know, it's like the more success we see there, the better. But, you know, like everything else in the music industry, it's not necessarily evenly distributed because not every artist is as good at it. You know, I mean, social media is a great example, right?
Yeah.
Not every artist is great at social media. The ones that are really great at it sometimes do better than the ones that, you know, are like, oh yeah, I forgot to post anything to my socials for 6 weeks. Like, oh, everybody forgot about me and moved on. It's just,
yeah. And then translating those online interactions into something that you can sell, you know,
exactly,
that you can actually commercialize. That's where I think the interest is, I think, because yes, the record industry is back as a result of subscriptions and streaming services, and the live side, depending on where you are, which class of venue you are,
right,
in terms of, you know, size, because the fans will do what fans will do. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
the question is, can labels, managers, artists, and platforms figure out what is an engaging fan activity that then is also monetizable? Because fans are already on Reddit. Nobody's making money off of Reddit. You know what I mean? Or Instagram is a tough one for artists to actually make money off. The licensing there is not very high, I don't think. I don't know the numbers. They're all covered by shrouds of NDAs and secrecy as far as I'm concerned. I'm sure you've heard them. But yeah, I think that's where it is. It's like, can you actually both get the engagement of fans and then figure out what are they willing to pay for beyond just listening to music?
Well, and also the cultural, like the sociological or anthropological part of it is when you look at a fan, it's like, this fan just liked this piece of music, and then they liked this cat rolling on a pile of, you know, bricks. Like,
yes,
what it, are those two things the same? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
what makes a fan, or rather than someone who just liked something because they noticed, they saw it for 1 second or whatever.
Yeah, sure, true.
You know, and I feel like, yeah, that is the, you know, it's like there's a lot of behavior involved in this that we just don't understand very well as a culture.
Right, yeah, yeah. Well, we've talked about TikTok, we've talked about AI, we've talked about music creation tools and the explosion there, and now we've talked about fandom. What else, Portia, do you think record labels, artist managers, DSPs, other industry execs, the music biz membership and potential membership should be thinking about in 2024?
Well, one of the things I think they are thinking about, just based on the proposals that we got for Music Biz this year, is something that sounds really mundane, and I can't even like quite figure out how to express it, but it's kind of like workflow, or just like how people work together in the industry. And I think that's also a holdover from the pandemic, because a lot of people still work from home, at least partially, but people are starting to think about productivity, and not productivity like I'm an ant that carries a grain of salt, you know, really in a boring way, but like literally, like, you know, how do we, for example, take an artist's song and try to make that song a hit in the US and South America and Europe and Asia. And do you know what I mean? It's like, and then you've got different teams of people across in, like, let's say you're a Universal or a, you know, one of the majors that's domiciled in a lot of different territories. Well, you've got all these different personalities and all these different people and all these different offices, but you're trying to use the same piece of music and make it popular. Like, that is a really interesting challenge of just like, how do people work together on that? And I think that's something that suddenly people are starting to think and talk about, which I really think is interesting from maybe just like a cultural perspective. Like, wow, how do you make something a global hit? Can you make something a global hit? Is it possible?
That's really interesting. We had Christine Osazua from Measure of Music and Shubes on the podcast a few episodes back, and she talked about something, a data point, because we were talking to her about the rise of Afrobeats and demographics, and she was talking about how she had studied a few years back the top songs in individual countries, and that I don't know if she said all the countries she studied, but many of the countries she studied, the top hit song was in an individual country was not on any other country's top 10 list.
Yeah, exactly.
And she pointed to the idea that it means that, you know, artists are going to need to collaborate with artists from other countries to break globally. Whereas before, you try to take a song and, like you said, like turn it into a global hit. Now, in order to do that, you actually have to do these cross-national border collaborations intentionally in order to get any audience in a second country, let alone 20 or 50 or 100 countries.
Exactly. And I think the fact that there have been so many global hits lately from countries that are not the U.S., the languages that are not necessarily English, is really interesting. You know, that is a different kind of situation. I mean, someone told me that the number one seller in his vinyl seller in his record store was K-pop, which is like, who would have thought that? I mean, and that was, this was like 2 years ago, right? But like 10 years ago, and that was unheard of, like that you couldn't imagine that being true, like that a Korean band would be the number one vinyl seller amongst, you know, kids age, you know, 13 to 18 or something. I just, so anyway, it's, I think that's an interesting thing to think about.
Yeah. You got to kind of open, now that we're all digital, there's this connection across the entire planet and it's kind of getting matured. You got to open your lens up wider and see what's coming and going. Yeah. All right. We got to take one more quick break. And when we come back, we should talk about the Music Biz Conference, which is coming up in May in Nashville. We'll be right back.
Let's do it.
The news cycle of the music industry and innovation in particular is accelerating at such a fast pace, it can be hard to keep up. That's why I launched Rock Paper Scanner, a free newsletter you can get in your inbox every Friday morning. Check out bit.ly/rpscanner. That's bit.ly/rpscanner. I scan hundreds of outlets for you, from the music trades to the tech blogs, from the music gear mags to lifestyle outlets, so that you don't have to. I handpick everything music tech, including industry revenue numbers, AI, cool new user tools, the live music and recording landscapes, partnerships and acquisitions, and everything else a Music Tectonics podcast listener would want to know. Open a browser right now and punch in bit.ly/rpscanner to sign up right now. Go ahead, hit pause and go to bit.ly/rpscanner or find the episode's blog post on musictectonics.com and find that link. Happy scanning, but for now, happy listening. Okay, we are back. Portia, the Music Biz Conference is coming up May 13th to 16th in Nashville, the city where I was born. Mm. What are a few highlights of the event that those in music tech and music innovation should know about?
Well, Dimitri, we are doing some exciting startup stuff. We're going to do a startup boot camp. That's one series of programming. We're also going to do startup round robins, where your company can sign up to do, you know, like 5-minute speed dating with investors and other companies. I think that is going to be really exciting. This is actually the first year we've done these ourselves, so we're very excited about those. We have Mengru Kwok from BandLab. He's going to give the AI keynote, which is exciting. I think that's going to be something that people are going to be into. And then,
oh yeah, absolutely.
For all the,
it's going to be the real Meng, not the AI Meng, right?
Correct. Yes, in the flesh. if he has a hotel room, he's not AI. I assume. And then we also have, for those of you who are just total nerds, we have like 7 hours of metadata programming. and the keynote for the metadata summit is really not sexy, but it's ISWC and ISRC linking at conception, which is a very big topic for right now. So that is something that I think people are going to really enjoy as well, if that's your bag. If metadata gets you excited, then that is...
It goes back to the workflow comment you made.
It sort of does, right? It's everybody's really interested in that. And I think that's great. I think that's what we need to do. That is, talk about a problem that needs to be solved.
Yeah. Cool. Awesome. Is it too late to get a badge?
Absolutely not. You can get a badge. I think you can get a badge all the way through the whole conference, but you probably want to get one on Monday. No later than Monday, or else it's not worth it.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. Cool. Musicbiz.org.
Perfect. Great. Okay. So before we let you go, we love our network to grow and we ask all our guests to shout out a few names of people in music innovation who you think are doing great work. Who would you like to shout out and why?
All right. Well, as I said earlier, I love companies that solve real problems in the music industry. And there are a few that I have as members. But I would love them even if they weren't members. They just happen to also be members. One is a fairly new company called Switchcord. Cole Davis is the main guy. I don't know if you know about them. That is fascinating. You guys should totally check that out. I mean, his ultimate goal is the identification of songs and the ability to, you know, I mean, we were talking about sync earlier. you know, the ability to, you know, properly identify songs for the purposes of sync licensing. But there's so many, you know, if that is a real problem in this industry, that if they have the technology to do that, could really change things for a lot of people. Like truly identify the usage of a song and the ownership of a song wherever that song is used all over the globe. Very exciting. The company co-signed, COSYND, Jessica Sobraj is the CEO. They have been around for a few years. Their thing has been copywriting songs and beats. But they recently just figured out a way with the copyright office to allow like a person who makes beats to register like a huge number of beats all at once, which is a big, big deal, because those of you who've ever tried to do that, it's expensive and time consuming. And, you know, if you have 100 beats that you're trying to register, and it takes, you know, a couple years to do it, well, you know, it takes 2 seconds for someone to grab that beat off the internet and use it in a song somewhere, and then you don't get paid. So love technology that helps artists get paid. And then the last one is just a company that has been around for a few years as well, called Sound Royalties. Alex Heike is the CEO. I love them because, you know, I've said it, Dimitri, a few times, I've been in this industry a long time, and I ran a label for a long time. And for a long time, getting funding in the music industry was really difficult. Like, I remember when I had to go to Chase Bank to get a loan, because we were going to press a new Elliott Smith pressing. Same album, different, like we just needed some money to press the album. And they were like, so this is what? A vinyl record? I mean, it was ridiculous, right? Like, it was just like, this is not, now things have changed. There are now banks that specialize in entertainment and specialize in music industry. And like, you can get a banker who knows what you're talking about. But one of the most amazing things is this company, Sound Royalties, sprang up doing microloans to artists so that they could do like a specific project. Like, I want to put out a video. I want to, you know, record a new song or whatever. And it's been so successful that now they've extended it to, they give loans to labels, distributors, you know, artists, management, whatever. Like, everyone in the industry has this as an option. And I love that, because I think any way to get money flowing in this industry just fuels creativity and helps people keep everything moving. And so I love what they do. And so I wanted to shout them out.
Awesome. Yeah, those are three great companies doing, and I love the diversity of what you brought there. And yeah, it all seems a little bit workflow, which is super cool.
I mean, you are at a
trade organization, so it makes sense. And all happen to be companies that Rock, Paper, Scissors has worked with as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
And yeah, super cool. So I guess we're both in the right place here.
Yeah.
Portia, so great. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us, share your thoughts at the top level, and share some upcoming news about the music business conference coming up May 13th through 16th in Nashville. Find out about the Music Business Association and the conference at musicbiz.org. We'll also put links to the companies that Portia shouted out in the show notes, so check those out too. Portia, thanks again. Really appreciate having you here.
Thanks, Dimitri. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Music Tectonics. If you like what you hear, please subscribe on your favorite podcast app. We have new episodes for you every week. Did you know we do free monthly online events that you, our lovely podcast listeners, can join? Find out more at musictectonics.com. And while you're there, look for the latest about our annual conference and sign up for our newsletter to get updates. Everything we do explores the seismic shifts that shake up music and technology, the way the Earth's tectonic plates cause quakes and make mountains. Connect with Music Tectonics on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. That's my favorite platform. Connect with me, Dimitri Vitsa, if you can spell it. We'll be back again next week, if not sooner.
You're listening to Music Tectonics.